Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we're going to continue on in the OHSAA White Book on a section entitled Calling the Pitch. Consistent mechanics lead to consistent judgment.
This should be fun today, Pete. So the first paragraph says, you know, kind of why are we doing it, right? Be consistent, Blue. Plate umpires have heard this grouse since the beginning of time. The fact is that consistency in plate mechanics leads to consistency in calling balls and strikes. In observations over several seasons, inconsistencies in plate mechanics have been noted. These inconsistencies have occurred in three main areas: positioning, going set, and timing of ball and strike calls. We'll outline the issue observed and suggestions for ensuring improvement.
Yeah, and we talked about this. Some people who are regular listeners might think, didn't we hear something about this? Maybe a little bit. As the book was going through, this was brought up just as a point of emphasis. We spent a couple minutes on that. It was reminded again in some things for on the plate umpires, miscues and mechanics issues. But here we're going to dive in depth, talking a little bit more about that plate umpire positioning.
Yeah, and we say in depth, this is two full pages of bullet points in the OHSAA manual or, you know, white book. And what you're seeing is 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. So there's quite a bit to talk about in here, Pete.
Yep. And so we might take this over two episodes. We try not to make these too terribly long and drone on about things when we don't need to, but we also want to give it the right amount of discussion and help for newer umpires or just experienced umpires who want to listen to us talk about it.
Yeah. So the first one to cover is positioning. So a major problem observed is umpires altering their stances, thus changing their positioning at the plate, batter to batter, and sometimes even pitch to pitch. These inconsistencies give those umpires a slightly different view of the strike zone and the path of the pitch. There are photos here in the upper right corner of this book that we won't be able to really talk about too much. But
if you go to umpiringfastpitchsoftball.com, I will screenshot these out of here and I will link them in the comments. So if you guys go there, click the link for this episode to dig into the details so you can see the comments. I'll have a link there so you guys can follow along as well.
That's great, Pete. And so essentially what those pictures are showing are a ball coming in near the strike zone, near the river, near the plate. And depending on the position that you're seeing them from, the ball wasn't moved in the picture, but the position that you're seeing it from or the angle that you're seeing it from has changed and they'd look completely different.
Yep, absolutely. So sometimes it looks like they're clearly not touching anything. Sometimes it looks like it could be. Sometimes the height of the ball looks a little different. So it is about consistent pitching or consistent positioning. And we did talk about this part before was, given your perspective, a ball that's a strike might look like a ball. But if you are always consistent and you realize to yourself that when I see a pitch that looks slightly outside, that means it's entirely over the edge of the plate because you've set up and positioned. Do the drills where you work with people and you see that pitch and then you stand up, look at it again from a different angle, see where it's at, and then examine that perspective and just kind of de-skew in your mind what that's going to look like.
Yeah. So here's some measures that umpires can take to achieve consistency. So the first one is to anchor your stance with the foot opposite the batter, i.e. the right foot for a right-handed batter, by stepping into a position with that foot directly behind the point of the plate about 8 to 12 inches from the catcher. This should allow for most catchers to move freely while you maintain a consistent distance from the plate.
Yep, and this one's the move freely is it's a good call out there because I've seen some umpires. I know when I was a catcher even that there were umpires that would position themselves too closely to me, and there were a couple that would even steady themselves on my back, and I couldn't. It didn't necessarily hinder me from moving, but God, I hated it. Like if I felt like I was just a fraction too slow in blocking a pitch because I had to like get out from under that or move a certain way. I didn't feel free to move, and it was mental. Maybe I needed to overcome that, and that's why I didn't go pro. But you know,
you think that's why? That's what it was.
Yeah, we don't want to be that hindrance to anyone. You know, get that distance, give consideration to where you're sitting there, but use them as a guide. And like you said, opposite the batter.
Yeah. So I have a couple of things here. One, I'm taller, so I'm 6'4". And in order for me to get as wide as I need to get so that I can get my eyes down at the top of the strike zone here, this is a Federation ball, so that's where they go, right? So the mechanic is to squat to your eyes to get to the top of the strike zone. And on a shorter batter, That's difficult for me to do sometimes. But so I can't do the point of the plate. I have to go wider than that. So I'm usually, you know, maybe right half of the plate, if you will, with that first foot, with that right foot. As far as back and forth goes, don't want to get in too much trouble by saying, oh, I kind of disagree a little bit here with the idea that it should allow you to maintain a consistent distance from the plate. That can absolutely change by catcher, batter to batter. You know, I've got catchers out there that are fantastic at working their position based on the batter. And so if the batter is in the front of the box, you'll see a catcher move up.
Yeah.
You know, and if a batter's in the back of the box, you'll absolutely see the catcher back up. If she backs up, you back up, right? Because you can't, again, like you said, you don't want to get trucked. You know, you're the umpire back there. And if she has to block that pitch, you know, you don't want trucked because I should break your ankles, you know, if you're too close. So, and you also don't want to be too far away because then you can't see the plate. So a little bit here, you just have to, I think, you know, of course, the point in the book is perfect in that you need to try to be as consistent as possible.
Yeah.
And certainly one of the most important pieces is your vision of the outside corner of that plate and making sure that's from a consistent viewpoint.
And something you said, but without saying there too, was you were talking about how to get low, and the way that you got low was by going wider and not bending.
Yeah,
and that is also important for keeping that consistency and saving your back. Because if you bend over at the waist all the time, instead of getting wider, you're going to find that as your back starts to hurt or just doing that in general, it's going to be hard to find that consistency and maintain that consistency instead of just, you know, getting wide and squatting down all in your thighs and your upper leg muscles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a very small bend forward. It's not even a bend, it's a lean, right? Yeah. That they call it a lean forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so then the next bullet point here says then, so now we've established where our right foot is. So by the book, it's at the point of the plate, 8 to 12 inches behind the catcher. Then step with your opposite foot towards the batter. The heel of this foot should be in line with the toe of your anchor foot. Your feet should be spread apart in such a way that you obtain a good balance and present minimal strain to your back and knees when you drop into the set position.
So there we go.
There it is.
I got a little ahead.
Yep, just a little bit.
So this is a couple things here. Heel toe, right? So this is describing for you in detail. When people say heel toe, this is what they mean. If you were to draw a line kind of parallel with the pitcher's plate and move it back to you, that line should be your left foot for a right-handed batter. Would be kind of just barely in front of that line, touching it to the top end, and your right foot, the anchor foot, touching it with the toe is what they're describing there. As well as this is saying, step with your opposite foot towards the batter. Again, this is if it's a right-handed batter, you've anchored your right foot, you're stepping with your left foot. So the anchor foot first, step towards, get that heel toe, and then the balance for the in your legs.
Perfect. In taking this position, should put your head into the slot, filling the position between the catcher and the batter. This puts the eyes looking at the inside edge of the batter's strike zone. Often the ear closest to the plate is on that edge of the plate. This has been proven to give you the best view of the movement of the ball in relation to the strike zone. Okay, I agree with that. In a perfect world, the catchers would align themselves in the same position behind the plate so that we could take our position in the same position throughout the game. Our footprints would show this consistency in placement, and our positions for right and left-handed batters would be mirror images. In the games in which one team's catcher aligns with the front edge of the catcher's box and the other takes a much deeper position, your position will vary. However, if you consistently align your anchor foot in the 8 to 12 inches behind each catcher, your view will be consistent for the batters of each team.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of addresses a little bit of what I said, you know, about the catcher and how they play. And however, it's thinking back to, you know, they made the reference there for your footprints. Sometimes I do get a little dug in in some games where it's like, you know, if it's, I can feel, you know, some pressure underneath my left foot is where I typically find it and say, oh yeah, this is where my foot goes. And that catcher must not be moving very much because I'm very consistently set up in the same place there with my feet anyway.
Yep. And there are times, when you get a nice rhythm going, I can look down and I can almost Sherlock Holmes the footprints and I'm like, well, there's me set. There's me standing up. There's me taking my step back. There's me stepping back in. I can just retrace the crime there.
Yep.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a tip, right? So I think if you're a newer umpire and you're trying to work a little bit on your consistency and positioning behind the catcher, take a look at that. Yeah, take a look at your footprints I don't think you can see them at Berliner.
No, you know, you're not going to see it. You're not going to see them on artificial turf.
but you will see them certainly in the dirt for sure. All right. So that was about positioning. So I think for me, I guess I would wrap it up by saying that while they're supposed to be mirror images of each other on a left-handed batter, I find myself being different often on a left-handed batter. And primarily, it's because a lot of the lefties that I've encountered anyway are slappers. And they hold their hands differently. They hold their arms differently. I know that if I set up as a mirror on a left-handed slapper, and it's an exact mirror of how I would have set up on my right-handed batter, I cannot see the pitch come from the pitcher. I have had to move almost every time. I see a slapper step in the box and I go, oh, let's see. You know, I get set and yep, I can't see the pitcher anymore. She's got her arms out there over the plate. She's, you know, she's completely blocking my view of the pitcher.
She's so far back that she's now with the perspective. Like you put your thumb in front of your face and now I'm blocking your head.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
Yep. So I found that to be the case. So I can't always mirror. I certainly try to the first time and then I have to adjust. You know, from there. All right, Pete. So what's the next set here? Dropping to set?
Yeah. So some other inconsistencies involve umpires taking the set position, which is when you kind of drop in to call the pitch. There's two elements, the timing, when to go set, and your height at the set position. So when. It's essential to be stationary to track the pitch. Umpires need to drop into the set position while the pitcher is in her windup and lock in time to see the release and track the entire flight of the pitch. Like a camera, our eyes get a distorted and blurred view when our head is moving. You talked about that once in the one episode when you were at the NCAA clinic, when it was mentioned about, you know, if you're driving 70 on the freeway, would you want to take a shot at a deer that was sitting there, or would you want to stop, get set, see the play, make a call?
See the play, make the call. Yeah, I think I said something about broadside, maybe. Yeah. Something like that. I think it was the OHSAA clinic with Jerry Fick. I think it was Jerry.
Oh, it was
Jerry that said that. But yeah, and I agree wholeheartedly. The idea of getting set. So, yeah, let's go ahead and then maybe we'll make some comments at the end of this section.
Yeah. And so where umpires should drop into a position in which their eyes are just above but not in the strike zone. Achieving the same height in relation to each batter will lead to the best judgment of the high and low perimeters of the strike zone. Because, of course, while the strike zone is consistent per hitter, it is not a box you could just draw in the air for every hitter because some hitters are 5 feet tall and some are 6'1". You know, so those strike zones are larger. You move yourself into relation to them, as it mentions. Something that was interesting back on the when, was it says you need to drop into the set position while the pitcher's in her windup. And I know we talked before about you as a coach weren't always a big fan of seeing that umpire moving maybe while the pitcher is in her motion. Like ideally, you'd want to get a good sense of timing and maybe get set fractional time before they begin their windup, right? So what's...
Yeah, for me, excuse me, for me, what I try to do when I'm on the plate, first of all, it's going to change by the pitcher's technique. So some pitchers are quick, you know, from the time that they separate their hands to the time that they're, you know, they've released a pitch or started a wind up, that kind of thing. So each pitcher is going to be a little bit different. I try to get an idea of the pitcher's timing and take a look, make sure they've stopped on the plate, so or on the pitcher's plate, you know, simulated taking the sign. Here, this is NFHS we're talking about. Then she's going to start her pitch. And if I get a good feel of that, where I can tell, okay, there she is. She's about to start. I'll go ahead and drop.
Yeah.
Now she could completely mess with me on that, you know, and start to take a breath or something. I'm like, oh shoot, you know, I'm squatting for too long. Right? Mm-hmm. But I try really hard to just to be set when she's really concentrating hard on that pitch. So that was one of the things I was going to comment on. So there's a summary here that says we must be able to see the entire plate, the entire strike zone, and the flight of the ball all the way from the pitcher's hand to the catcher's glove. We may need to make adjustments to avoid being blocked by the catcher or a batter crowding the plate. Make the necessary adjustments, but be sure to account for them when judging the pitch. So back to these little pictures that we're going to link to, you know, to say, oh, if I do move myself, though, keep in mind that, you know, that same pitch that looked a little bit outside, if it, you know, now I've moved myself left and now it looks less outside. Ooh, but is it, you know, so just make sure that you're adjusting to that.
Yep. And that's one of those things that kind of only comes from experience of seeing enough pitches or running enough practice to do that. So it's, again, reminds you of the experience, see as many pitches as you can, call hitting leagues, call games, work as much as you can, you'll get better.
Great. So the third and final point that they're making here in calling the pitch section of the white book is timing. The third area of inconsistencies involves the timing of making ball and strike calls. When an umpire is quick to make a ball strike call on one pitch, then slower on another, it appears that the umpire was unsure of the latter pitch location.
That's true.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. It's like, oh, did you have to think about that one, Blue? You know? So, additionally, when umpires are observed rushing their calls, the verbal call or strike call comes very close to the sound of the ball entering the catcher's glove. There's a concern that the umpire did not see and track the pitch in its entirety. Timing here, super perfect, I guess. Let's wait and get the points out this time before, before I start just, you know, pontificating here. So to address this, it's essential that umpires develop very deliberate mechanics to be used on every single pitch.
Yep. So point one, track the pitch from its release to the catcher's glove before making any judgment. When an umpire vocalizes ball or strike almost simultaneously with the sound of the ball hitting the catcher's glove, almost assuredly the umpire has judged that pitch too quickly.
Yeah, agreed. After the pitch reaches the catcher's glove, make your judgment and give the vocal call from the set position. Yes, we make a vocal call on balls, though the tone and inflection may be different, might be different. Staying in set and giving the ball call will help maintain the habit of timing.
Yeah. And then after making the vocal call, stand straight up, but do not move from your position. We don't want to look like we're backing away from the pitch, but that we got a great look at it.
That's right. If the pitch was a strike, give the strike signal after you have come to your standing position. Don't give this while you're in the process of rising.
Yeah. And after standing and giving your signal, if appropriate, you can step back out of your stance, which takes the pressure off of your back and knees. This also serves to clear your head and prepare you for the next pitch.
So I would change this one a little bit. It says that you can step back out of your stance, which takes the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
You should.
You should.
Yeah. So, you know, the timing of this call, here comes the pitch in, smack, it's caught by them, ball. Stand, step back, wait on the pitcher. She takes her position on the pitcher's plate. Step in, get your positioning at the appropriate time. Squat, watch the next pitch.
Yeah.
Stand, hammer, back out, just like that. I mean, it should be that. You should practice this in your living room.
Right? I think it telegraphs the right thing too, because it's as you stand back. I can tell you for myself. So when I'm doing the mechanics part, I'm very like almost like a soldier or something when I'm doing a drill. So it's like, you know, like, huh, stand up straight, hammer. Like those are all like crisp movements, like I'm doing a drill. And then it's step back, which is still part of that crisp movement, but then it's kind of relaxed. And then I kind of just, just like really sit there. And if I'm going to, you know, prance for a second, like jiggle my shoe because like I got a rock in it or something. I'm going to do that there and I'm going to just be a little looser, stand there at ease, whatever. I'm kind of, and then step back in. Now it's business time. And when you do it also demonstrates that it's like, okay, I'm ready for this pitch. You can get ready. You can, sometimes the umpire is doing whatever, not ready. You're going to get hit in the face with the ball,
sure,
whatever it is. But no, I've kind of dictated this is, and also it can push that pace of play. When I'm out, there's no play, nothing's happening. But as soon as I step in, it's, oh, he's ready for the pitch. We're going. It's go time.
And, yeah, let's
and then,
go.
So I'm kind of indicating as well by my behavior that we're on to the next one. Next one. That one's over. Next one.
Yeah, absolutely. So in summary, consistently in your timing demonstrates your confidence as well as keeps you from rushing your call. And the OHSAA hopes that the umpires will find these mechanics useful and make you more consistent in 2024 and beyond. Then there's a special thanks here to Tom Hathaway, a longtime umpire and instructor with Blue Chip Umpires in Cincinnati, and an assigner who prepared this article. So thanks for that,
thanks
Tom.
Thanks to him. Thanks for all the good people at OHSA. We did make it through this only one episode without it getting too long, so not too bad. But I guess we just didn't feel like extra special windy today.
Not too verbose on this episode. Well, anyway, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.